Bullying is often dismissed as an expected childhood behaviour. However, it is an attempt to instill fear and self-loathing in its victim. That is not a healthy way to behave. Being the repetitive target of bullying damages a person's ability to see themselves as desirable, capable, and effective. Often this results in psychological distress, social and emotional dysfunction, along with a loss of productivity. The damage may be long-term. Unfortunately, bullying is not confined to childhood. The lessons and habits learned as children are exhibited in the workplace and, unfortunately, in the home. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. I'm Dr. Narada and I'm so glad you've joined me for today's show. Go Healthy for Good is live every Monday to Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and you can watch all of the previous episodes on our podcast. Just look for Go Healthy for Good on iTunes. If you have questions on the topic tonight, call us at 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Our phone lines are open for your calls right now. You can also text us as a message or a question on 301 960 5144. We look forward to hearing from you. Today we're exploring the topic of bullying. Unfortunately, almost all children in America have experienced bullying. This is a real problem. On today's show, we're going to talk about the problem, but we're also going to look for solutions. You really don't want to miss what we have in store for you today. But first, let's take a look at a report that we've put together for you.
Middle school can be a place for learning.
It has the best farmland.
Discovery. Yeah. But for some kids, it can also be a place of cruelty.
They were like, oh, you're such a loser. Why are you doing that?
Loneliness.
I told them like 1,000 times, well, I said, I'm left out.
Fear.
I was very, very scared to go to school every day.
Behind these smiles were children of despair, children who've committed suicide after being bullied, at least 12 in the last year.
In more than 75% of the cases, I think it was, kids don't intervene or nobody intervenes.
The biggest misconception in this country is that bullying is normative behavior, that this is just kids being kids and that it really is no big deal.
It's a worrying trend. Nearly a third of American students between 12 and 18 report being bullied during the school year. That's 8.3 million children. But most suffer in silence. Just 36% ever notify an adult. And experts say bullying is more common now than ever.
Wright cites a study which found that in two-thirds of school shootings from West Paducah, Kentucky to Columbine, the shooters had been repeatedly bullied. Another study found 60% of bullies in grades 6 through 9 had at least one criminal conviction by age 24.
The study also shows why kids bully. Sociologist Robert Ferris calls it social combat, using aggressive bullying behavior to climb the social ladder.
It's pretty much a race to the top. By getting to the top, you view yourself as one of the important people of your school, and that's the reason why bullying occurs.
Joining me today is Brian Kittleson. He's the principal of the Spencerville Seventh-day Adventist Academy. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So tell us, how big is this problem in America?
The problem itself is large, and it varies from school to school. I would say one of the biggest impacts of this problem is when it occurs, the emotional impact is very significant.
What's at the heart of bullying? What makes a bully want to be a bully?
It's an excellent question that you ask, and in schools we wrestle with this every day as we deal with situations between students where someone has either been bullied or is bullying, and we begin to unravel those communications and those instances between those students. And we find it varies dramatically from student to student. But at the heart of those issues is a balance of power and the need for power.
So it's that power hunger.
Yes.
That humans unfortunately have.
Yes, it's been around since the beginning of time.
So what risk factors make some kids act out and become bullies?
The risk factors, again, vary from student to student. But a lot of what drives a student is going to either come from the home or past experiences and sets them up for either healthy communication or unhealthy communication.
So communication is a big part of this. Can parents contribute to that problem then?
We do find there are contributing factors. Students learn how to deal with conflict, and they learn how to deal with it in healthy ways or unhealthy ways. And where are the models for our communication? They're all around us. We find it on television, and there's shows that are very negative in teaching students how to communicate. At the home, how are mom and dad communicating? At school, are the teachers communicating in healthy ways, etc.? So the students are getting these inputs from multiple directions.
And so also respect is something that we learn by modeling, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And the definition of respect?
Boy, I've always lived by the idea that the respect that you want, you should give. And so I would never expect someone to automatically respect me. But what I would do is begin by always giving respect.
And that can be an issue with parenting,
yes,
can't it?
Yeah.
Parents, I'm not a parent, but I see parents in stores and out in the public place, and I see them sometimes disrespectful to their children. So I guess I've never thought about it that way, but they are not earning respect by showing disrespect to them.
Yes, absolutely.
What risk factors are there for becoming a victim of bullying?
Victims in bullying, such a sensitive topic, because so many people have experienced bullying, and the impact on their lives can be from small to very significant. And so when we talk about how is a person going to receive bullying, are there profiles, etc., there are some out there, and yet it can happen to anyone, and that's what can make this so unsettling. Students maybe that are quieter, less assertive, may be a target, but not necessarily.
And the profile for a bullier?
Bullies come in all shapes and sizes, but often we find that they are larger. They oftentimes are physically stronger than their peers, and oftentimes their personalities are of a stronger nature.
Interesting. So what happens to a victim psychologically?
We see the impact in multiple ways in schools, but one of the most significant impacts is a reduction in their desire to come to school. When your student comes home and is feeling sad about school, does not want to return to school, you see their grades coming down, these are signs that as a parent you should be very worried about and you should investigate immediately.
So when you say investigate, talk to the child.
Yes.
But?
Make a phone call. As fast as parents can engage their school, their teacher, their principal, and begin to unravel what's happening, to ask the questions, to listen to their student very well, and then respond with the information that you have by contacting your school. And don't be surprised. This is difficult to say, but don't be surprised if your school pushes back a little bit. I've heard of that many times where a school just doesn't really want to agree that this is happening in their school. Who would want to admit that that's happening in their school?
Right.
And so don't be discouraged by that pushback, but move forward in the process.
So just keep asking.
Absolutely.
The teacher, the principal.
Absolutely. Talk to them about it and expect that there's going to be a response and expect that the response is going to be immediate.
That can take some courage.
Yes, it can.
Because if a victim is not as assertive as the average, their parents may not be as assertive as the average either.
So absolutely.
Should they put that in writing if they find it hard to verbalize it? And is that more powerful for a school to have to deal with?
Absolutely. Something in writing can often, you know, catch the attention of a person who may be a little more resistant to a verbal conversation. There's nothing like having something in writing. And yet, as educators, I believe that you know, the majority of educators want the best for students. And so they're going to be receptive to hear this, and they're going to want to do something about it. The few that don't, those are the ones you have to push.
Okay.
Don't be afraid to push.
And if parents suspect something, the teacher hasn't seen anything, are they left then with just a big question mark as to why this behavioral change, the psychological change, the change in the academic performance, you know, that can go on for a while?
It really can. And, you know, there's this idea that teachers can see everything at all times. And though we've told kids that we have eyes in the back of our heads and that we see and hear everything, we really don't.
Right.
And this kids are excellent at learning when to do these things so that they don't get caught. And so we would hope that the teachers see everything, but they don't. The idea is when I hear about it from a parent or from a student, I act. Action occurs.
So it's that personal responsibility that you take on as a principal.
Absolutely.
How often does a victim approach a school counselor, a teacher, a parent?
We find that the students just are not reporting. When we begin to unravel a situation, we discover that this has maybe been going on for some time. And of course, we're always brokenhearted. We wish, why didn't they talk to us about this? We could have intervened so much sooner. But students, they live by these unwritten codes. I'm not going to be the one that tells. I don't want to be labeled as a snitch. If I tell, maybe it's going to get worse if the adults don't do something. And
right.
So this is a dynamic. And so that's why when we do find out, we must respond, because we know that it's not getting reported, but maybe 30% of the time.
So what can you do?
As a parent, as a principal, as a student, I think the key is to respond. At Spencerville, we're doing a lot of different things, but I know that's another part of the show. We don't want to talk about solutions yet, but I think the key is being very aware. If you're a parent, being aware of your students' emotional well-being. If you're a principal, a teacher, being very receptive to feedback from parents and students and noticing when things just aren't right.
What are the long-term consequences of bullying?
I think the data really shows that long-term consequences for students that have been bullied really impact them for life. They find lowered self-esteem. They find that these students, these children, have even changed career paths as a result of some of the impact in their life.
Wow. I hope you're learning tonight as much as I am. Bullying is a major problem for our families and for our society. After the break, we'll discuss some solutions and ways to empower your kids to stop this epidemic. Don't move. We'll be right back.
When I was reading through The Great Hope, this phrase came across that I found very interesting. While the investigative judgment is going forward in heaven, while the sins of penitent believers are being removed from the sanctuary, there is to be a special work of purification, of putting away of sin among God's people upon earth. You see, Jesus is doing his thing up in heaven, but we also need to do our thing here on earth. And what is that? Giving it our all to God, giving everything to Him, bowing down at the foot of the cross. And you know what the cross means? The cross means Christ's redemption, obliterating Satan's schemes. Satan's schemes have no power over us. God is first and only.
Welcome back. Today we're learning more about bullying and how we can protect our kids from being victims of bullies, as well as how to stop them from tormenting anybody. Discussing this with us is Brian Kittleson. Brian, how, as a school principal, how can you put things in place to prevent this problem or to stop it from happening?
Absolutely. I've taken kind of a life goal of mine is to be proactive rather than reactive. So within our school, we're always looking at what kinds of things can we put in place to actually prevent rather than cure a particular problem. And in the case of bullying, prevention really comes in the idea of community and culture in the school. And that is within the classroom, developing a community of learners that establishes respect from the very beginning, the first day of school, and respect and honor and care for each other, and finding resolutions for conflict and teaching the students how to do that right from the start. So instead of letting the students set the community and culture in the classroom, we ask our teachers to take a very proactive role in setting community by using class meetings, conflict resolution techniques, etc. And so it's not left to a barnyard mentality where, hey, just let the strong rise and the weak fall and everything will sort itself out. We don't buy into that from the past.
What if you have a bullying issue that's going on? That's great prevention, I love that. But what if you have an issue that has developed? What would you do then?
The first thing that we do is we begin to unravel the issue and hear from the students involved what is going on. We interview, we ask questions, and we begin to find out, has this been going on for a long time, a short time, just began, maybe it spans several years and we're just now finding out about it. And so through questioning and interviewing, we begin to lock in those kinds of details. And then after that, we deal with the bully, and we help the person who has been bullied. And those are pretty different approaches.
I'm sure. So let's take one at a time. How do you help the bully? Because they must be in a pattern of behavior. They've probably got a group around them that expect them to be the tough one. And so their expectations and just those patterns of behavior and the way that they respond to situations.
I tell you that it is a challenge, and you have bullies, and sometimes they are very dynamic individuals, leaders in their classroom, and you think, wow, this has been going on right underneath our noses. But the message has to come very clear from the school, from the parents, from the teacher to the bully, that this is completely unacceptable. We want you to have a productive, happy, successful life, but it can't be through these avenues. And we're so serious about this that your continuation at this school is on the line. And we want to support you. We want to help you. We want to help you find healthier ways to communicate. But there is no tolerance for this.
When they're caught out, are they very shamed?
You know, that's a great question. It varies. It really does vary by individual and the level of accountability that they may experience in their own lives in the past. And so I've seen large differences in how a student responds.
And their parents, are they usually supportive of the teacher or the student? Or does that vary too?
I can tell you that the emotional response by parents is so high now because bullying is in the media. We see it on the news quite often. And so the moment you attach the word bullying to behavior of a student, you have now ratcheted up the emotional response that comes both from the school and from the parent because it carries such a powerful connotation. So we have to be careful not to over-label and decide that a particular one incident is bullying, because bullying, we know, is repeated intentional behavior over time. But when we really have come across bullying and have deemed that that's what it is, I think you have to say that this is what it is, and yes. You have to deal with it.
Now for the victim, what help is there for the victim, or how do you deal with the victim?
That is probably actually sometimes tougher than dealing with the bully. At times, the bully may begin to change his behavior. If not, they're removed from your school. And at least for your school now, that situation is resolved with that bully. For the victim, they're dealing with deeper issues that may have happened over time. And now you have to try to help them begin to unravel those emotions and start to find ways in life where they can maybe be more assertive, learn to say no a little stronger, but most importantly, learn to ask for help when something is not working in their life and they can't find a solution for it.
So they tend to be non-seekers of help. I guess they've fallen into that pattern because they were so fearful of retaliation if they sought for help. And what are some of the healthy ways that parents can prevent their children from bullying?
You know, I've heard it labeled bully-proofing, how to bully-proof your child. And I think that any time that you can spend time with your child as a parent, as young as possible, teaching them how to say no, teaching them how to ask for help when they need help, teaching them to be assertive and yet not abusive.
Right.
And so it's really, you know, teaching them the skills of conflict resolution and the ability to kind of stand up for themselves. But when that doesn't work, to ask for help, and that's a key, it's asking for help.
Thank you. Cyberbullying is a problem that affects almost half of all American teenagers. And we've prepared another short report for you. Take a look.
As if bullying wasn't bad enough, technology is magnified. And if you have children, you probably know about cyberbullying. It is a huge problem because kids and teens can verbally attack victims without facing them.
A report from the charity Beat Bullying suggests that 1 in 10 primary school children have experienced persistent bullying. And a third of these were targeted in online games.
Someone that used to be my friend called me a black piggy. Go back to your farm because no one likes you. And my mum said to delete that person and don't speak to them, which is really hard because they're in my class.
He was my friend. I added him as a friend. And like a couple of days later, he just like started swearing at me. That was really confusing because I added him as a friend. I thought we'll just like be actual friends.
Last year, 13-year-old Megan Meyer hanged herself after getting emails from a boy she thought had jilted her. But those emails turned out to be fake. But this tragedy did turn a spotlight on a dark corner of teen life, cyberbullying.
She was a 13-year-old Missouri girl who killed herself in 2006, apparently after being harassed online by the parent of a former friend. The adult in the Meyer case was convicted, but it was only on a misdemeanor count.
You know, one of the biggest problems with bullying is that kids don't want to report it. Only 25% of teens who are cyberbullied ever tell an adult.
According to recent studies, this kind of bullying is on the rise. By one count, as many as 1 in 3 kids is being victimized.
Katie Uffins dropped out of high school after a group of kids told her they had a Kill Katie club. And police have now arrested 2 of them.
Just a few years ago, bullying was usually limited to schools or playgrounds. Victims could go home to escape. But today, texting and cyberbullying means there's no escape from the taunting.
That is so true. There's no escape. It used to be that bullying only happened really at school. And then you could leave school at 3 o'clock and you were free.
That's right.
Does much cyberbullying happen during school hours?
You know, the cyberbullying, again, like you just said, opens up a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week window for bullying to occur. When we went to school, you know, you left school and you went home and there was kind of a reprieve if this kind of a thing was happening. But now there is no reprieve. And so our schools are doing a pretty good job of really managing software using controls to manage student access to technology, and yet this very thing can still occur right inside the walls of the school. But if not, if the filters keep it from happening at school, the moment they go home, it can start right back in.
So do students carry cell phones at school, and can they use them at school?
That's a very interesting question, and if you lined up 100 principals, you would find 100 different answers to that. In a small private school that we operate, we are embracing technology, and we're embracing the devices that the kids bring to school, but we just manage them. They're only used for educational purposes when the student isn't using it to read a book or engage in some kind of solution online, then they're asked to put them away. So they're not using them during the day to text and talk, etc.
During lunch breaks or play breaks? No.
It's basically use them for educational purposes or they're put away.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how many schools would have those clear boundaries?
Some schools are going to have even tighter boundaries than that, as in no electronic devices all day. Other schools are going to be a little more open than that and allow the students to use them. We try to find a path in the middle, embrace the technology that kids are using, and then use education and drive that in through that device.
So the internet and all the online devices, they're so open to abuse, aren't they?
Yes.
As a school principal, how do you see your role in preventing or stopping cyberbullying? Or do you see that as more something that is for parents to deal with?
You know, I think it's a united effort, and I think the key is communication between home and school. If a parent believes that something is beginning to happen, you know, talk to your school. Find out if the IT person at your school can start to begin to do a little bit of sleuthing and to find out what may be happening behind the scenes at school. And there of course, is at home, you would always want to, as a parent, be very involved in your students' online activity. Know their passwords into their accounts. Put the computer or the device out in a public location in the household. Don't have your students behind their bedroom door with the door closed. It's just good parenting is to keep that out where we can see it. And one of the indicators that a student's being bullied is when they get angry with their electronic device, or they've just read an email, and you can really see that hurt and anger. But if they're closed off in their bedroom, you're not going to see some of those responses.
That's a good tip. In just a few minutes, we're going to visit with Justin, our cooking expert, and also coming next, we have a web expert that's going to share some practical advice on how to protect your kids from cyberbullies. But first, here's today's medical news report. Headlines today: better grades but poorer behavior, teens in need of the golden rule, child abuse triggers early death, and why did you say you hit the wall? Researchers in Dallas studying bullying among 13,000 6th to 10th graders have found that frequent bullying was carried out by 7%, moderate bullying by 13%, and any bullying by more than one-third of students. Those at highest risk for bullying carry weapons, smoke, have more than one alcoholic drink a day, achieve above average academic performance, come from affluent homes, and feel irritable or bad-tempered on a daily basis. A recent study set out to audit bullying in adolescents diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. It was found that almost half were victims, 15% were perpetrators, and 10% were involved as both victims and perpetrators. Victims tended to have attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD, lower social skills, some conversational ability, and attended more classes and general education. Perpetration, on the other hand, was related to being white, having ADHD, and getting together with friends at least once a week. The golden rule springs to mind: do to others what you would have them do to you. Young men who experience mistreatment as a child have a 60% greater risk of violent injuries and almost 2.5 times the risk of premature death when compared to those who do not experience child abuse. the study published in Archives of Pediatric and Adolescent Medicine found these associations to be partially explained by adolescent involvement in violence and drug dealing. Interventions are needed to prevent maltreatment of children so that we can reduce the risk of adolescent deviant behaviors and help decrease the risk for later serious injuries and premature death in young men. It is traditionally believed that being bullied as a child is associated with internalizing symptoms. However, a study in the International Journal of Social Psychology has found that bullying in childhood is associated with externalized aggressive behaviors as an adult. The longer the childhood bullying, the more aggression is expressed as an adult. Four behaviors were more common: hitting walls, purposely breaking things, getting into fistfights, and pushing or shoving a partner. There are much better ways to deal with the past. Find a good anger management program and find freedom. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's medical news report.
A movement toward daily scripture reading is underway. It's called Revived by His Word. The plan? To read one chapter of the Bible per day. The goal? To direct the attention of participants to the importance of knowing Jesus through His Word.
Here we are in the kitchen again, and by the way, I want to thank our viewers for the many positive comments about this section. Thank you. I have a surprise for you today. You can go to gohealthy.hopetv.org and find all the recipes that we've given you up till now. You can also watch all the previous episodes and also the live show in high definition. You've got to take a look at it. The web address again, gohealthy.hopetv.org. Justin, how are you?
I'm doing great, especially since I know what we're going to be cooking.
Aha! This is man food, isn't it?
Man food, yes. Get in my belly.
Do you want to read the ingredients
for us? Sure, yeah. So these are oat burgers.
Oat burgers.
Oat burger patties. This is your special recipe for oat burger patties.
Yes.
Okay, so oat burger patties. 4.5 cups water, 1 cup of chopped onion, 1.5 teaspoons of basil, 2 teaspoons of onion powder, 1/2 cup of Bragg's liquid aminos, 1 cup of grated carrots, 3/4 teaspoons of oregano, 1/2 cup of pimentos, 1/3 cup canola oil or tahini oil, 1/4 cup of yeast flakes, 1 teaspoon of garlic powder, and 4.5 cups of rolled oats.
All right. Well, thank you for that. I've cheated. I've gone ahead and got the water and the liquid aminos boiling.
Okay, now liquid aminos, is that kind of like soy sauce?
It is. You can see it looks just like soy sauce, but it's not fermented.
Oh, okay.
So fermentation, I tend to steer away from fermented. I think that's different, though, to cultured. You know, yogurt is a culture of bacteria, whereas fermentation is different. You get different byproducts.
I see.
Yeah, so that's what that's about.
So is there, you know, it's liquid aminos. Aminos, that's something that we need in our bodies, right?
Right. It's amino acids put into a mixture that it's salty, like soy sauce, but
you can use it pretty much the same way.
Yes,
and it's yummy.
Made from soy. So it's, it's like soy sauce, but it's not a fermented product of soy. So it's got all those amino acids, all those proteins.
So it tastes just as good as soy sauce, but it's healthy.
Correct. Actually, I think it tastes better.
Amen.
Right. We've got that to the boil. And basically, we put all the other ingredients in.
Oh, that's easy.
And let them simmer for a little few minutes. So, let's see. What shall I start with? Onion.
Mm.
That's going to make it smell real good in here.
Ugh. Anything with onions.
Yeah. Oh. Do you know what?
Can I stir that for you while
yes,
you go?
Yes. Why don't I stir and then, since you're on that side.
Okay. What do you want next?
Let's have the tahini.
Ooh, tahini.
Yeah. So we can have, sorry, there was a slight, I put that wrong on the screen. Should have been canola oil or tahini. And I prefer to use whole products where oil is a, you know, processed food. So if I can use a whole product like sesame butter, tahini, then that's what I'd go for.
That's a great idea.
But of course,
idea.
Some people can't get hold of tahini easily.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, really, what I found is that if you want to find good tahini, you can't buy what's labeled tahini. You have to get sesame butter.
Really?
I've found that what's labeled as tahini oftentimes in the stores is extremely bitter, just almost inedible.
Is that right? It's probably gone rancid then?
It might have, but I've found that when I buy sesame butter, it's always this nice...
Well, how about that? Let's put some carrots in. This is going to give us some nice color. Now, let's have some basil and oregano. Mm. That's the secret ingredient. Oh.
A little 1-2 shot here.
Bam, oh, I like
bam.
It.
Double
bam,
barrel.
Bam, yeah. And then we've got onion. Although we've put some raw onion in, we've got onion powder and garlic powder.
As much onion as you could put in there in all of its different forms, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
And garlic. Huh?
And garlic.
Oh, throw that garlic.
Yes.
And then we've got pimentos or sweet bell pepper, if you don't have the pimentos. So, or capsicum, it's called in some places in the world.
Some strange areas of the world.
Strange areas of the world that some of us might call home.
Oh, yes.
I bet they don't call it that in Texas.
No.
No.
We call
no.
them pipers.
Say again.
Pipers.
Oh, I wish I could say it so well. And then those nutritional yeast flakes, again, nice savory flavor.
Now, they're called nutritional yeast flakes. Is that a lie, or are they actually nutritional?
Yes, they are nutritional.
Really?
Yeah,
how?
Loaded with B vitamins.
Oh, B vitamins.
Now, that's done a little boil, so do you want to add the rolled oats?
Yeah. So,
oh, look at that.
So you put everything else in,
everything
bring it to
else
a boil,
is in.
And then put the oats.
Yes, then we're going to put the oats.
Man, that smells good.
And the oats will have to absorb the water, just like we had last night with our baked oatmeal. So that's going to then just sit. We'll turn that off now.
So you bring it to the boil, and then you take it off the heat?
Yeah, I'll just leave it on the heat, and then it will just keep boiling for a few more minutes.
Okay.
And
you put the lid back on, or let the...
Yeah. I will, actually, because I think we want those oats to soften up nicely.
Okay.
So that's a good idea. Put the lid back on.
That smells scrumptious.
Mm-mm. And then that will actually sit for 15 minutes, which we can't do on screen.
Right, right.
And then we'll just take, I find this a great way to make little patties, and spread them out, squish them down, and here we have our finished product.
That looks scrump-diddly-umptious.
It does, doesn't it?
Yes.
Should I take this and you take this, or the other way around?
Well, I guess we could just pick this thing up and...
Meet in the middle?
Yeah. Well,
maybe we'll just attack
this. Yeah, that might not work out so well.
Yeah. Okay, here we go.
All right.
Although that would be fun.
I've got my piece.
Well, you go for it. I'm really struggling here. Mm-mm.
Mm. That's tasty.
Oh, I love oat burgers.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-mm-mm. I forgot to tell you.
Mm, that is really
good. We pop them in the oven. So once we've got them on our baking sheet, let me see, 350 degrees for 30 minutes, and then you flip them and do another 15 minutes.
So really, it's actually kind of like an oatmeal cookie that you put inside a burger.
Yeah, it is, I guess. But it's got some protein and some...
Oh, it's delicious.
Oh, it's very nice, very nice. Well, in just a moment, we'll meet a web specialist that's going to show some practical ways to protect our kids from cyber bullies. But first, here's today's Ageless Advantage spot.
Colorectal cancer, a leading cause of death in the U.S., usually begins with the growth of benign polyps. The good news is that polyps can be avoided with a high-fiber diet. The Adventist Health Study found that eating legumes at least 3 times a week, or brown rice once a week, reduced the risk of colon polyps by about 40%. Whole grains and legumes, such as garbanzos, beans, and lentils, are an excellent source of fiber. A high-fiber diet is another ageless advantage.
Joining us today is Daryl Thompson. Daryl has experience as a father, a teacher, and currently works in web development. So we've invited him into the studio to give us some practical tips on internet use for families and children. Welcome, Daryl. Now, with all these devices around, our teenagers are very savvy with them, but also that opens them up to cyberbullying. How many kids do you think will have been exposed to something purposely offensively sent to them on their devices?
Well, the facts here, Dr. Narada, say that 90% of teenagers mostly they use the cell phone, have had some form of cyberbullying online.
Wow. And then there's the social media, the internet. Tell us, how can we protect our children with the internet? There's software out there, or
Cyber Patrol is available on cyberpatrol.com. It's a fantastic parental piece of software. It's inexpensive. It's around $40. You can install it onto a laptop or a desktop computer in the home to protect them from websites. You know, it's a great web filtering device. I would also suggest that, you know, a computer doesn't go into a child's bedroom until an age that's been determined. It's better to keep it out, and it's a well-known fact, to keep it out into an open lounge room or a family room or some place which, you know, it's in a comfortable open environment. They're less likely to be attacking someone else or be going to sites that they shouldn't be.
So we don't need privacy for a computer. We need privacy in the bathroom, but not around a computer. I like that message.
Most teenagers will tell you opposite, but it's not true.
Yes. They will. And there's a certain element of privacy, even in a family room, isn't there, that you can just create nicely.
Right.
What is it? Is it better to provide a computer, a smaller device that you have more control of? What would you do as a parent?
You know, for assignments, for homework, computer, you know, is perfect. But I believe for a student, they should have like a tablet or some form of device that you can have more control over.
So you control these more than you control that?
Yes, because, you know, with a tablet, if you set it up with an administrator password, for example, and I'd always never give your child an administrator password, always give them a user account. That's safer. Mm-hmm. But on a tablet, you know, they have limited access. They can access the internet or they only can access the apps that you've installed. And if you hold that administrator account, they can't go ahead and install the apps
that you
without
might
your
not.
Permission. Yes.
And the ones that might be not ones that you would choose for them.
Exactly. Especially, you know, there's a lot of games out there that can tend to be violent, for example, which can bring about, you know, risky behavior. Yes.
Now, I'm thinking of video games and violence.
Mm-hmm.
Is there some way of knowing what video games contain before you buy them?
Well, they always have a rating system. You know, you will see, you know, G or T or adult. So if the parent looks at the box, they'll know straight away and it'll give you a recommended age and rating on that game. And sadly, a lot of parents sort of ignore that and they allow, FPS or first-person shooters, as they're sort of called, is all too popular, and that can bring about risky behavior, which we've seen in the news lately.
Right. Now, I understand that up to 40% of middle school students have had their device stolen by a bully or hacked.
Mm-hmm.
Their password, they've lost their password, and then I'm thinking that would expose all their friends to abuse. Would that be fair to say?
Yes, if a person account gets stolen, or they could then masquerade as that person, which happened, you know, I take care of at a school, their IT as well on one day a week, and we put in place some strict guidelines, and I think every school actually should have a strict internet guideline policy for use. But then, you know, if someone actually steals or masquerades as someone else's, what happened in this case, a lot of things can do with authorities. You can actually trace and track online behavior, and there are penalties involved if a person is caught cyberbullying. So, you know, it's not just a schoolyard misdemeanor, so to speak. There are actual criminal possibilities.
Great. So what can a parent do if they find that their child is being cyberbullied?
I had a parent in a case contact me, and we, within a few hours, tracked down who the perpetrator was, and we contacted their parents directly. I believe that you need to deal with it head on. If you feel as a parent, and if you have a good relationship with your child, which I believe you should, then you can detect behaviors in them that are abnormal, and sometimes it could be, you know, bullying is taking place. So, and act quickly and deal with it decisively.
Now,
don't think that, hey, we'll just let it go this time. Deal with it right then, because it normally only escalates.
Now, teenagers sometimes take a pseudonym, mm-hmm. or they hide behind a name.
An
avatar, yeah. And they are, as a parent, you don't know who that bully might be. Mm-hmm. What would you do then?
That's the biggest danger. I believe, you know, if you have that computer outside the bedroom, too often we've heard about teenagers that think that they're communicating with a boyfriend or think that they're communicating with another adult, and they could be a pedophile. You know, all too often that happens. And they go out, they make a rendezvous, they meet with them, you know, obviously in a public place often, but then they abscond them, and sometimes you never hear from them again, or they're abused. And
right.
So be very cautious. Make sure that you make personal contact with the person they're going to meet.
So just don't arrange text meetings, final confirmation, pick up the phone, actually mm-hmm. speak to the person on the
exactly.
other end. You might get a surprise.
Exactly. Know who you're talking to.
Excellent. Well, that's been really helpful.
Sure.
Thank you so much for coming into the studio today.
Lovely talking with you, Dr. Narada. You're welcome.
Now, I have so enjoyed your comments and your questions on Facebook. Don't forget, you can call us live. The number is 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. And today, just as we did yesterday, we have a beautiful book for you called Celebrations. And it's written by Dr. Handysides, Dr. Harding, Dr. Kuntaroff, and Dr. Landless. And it is a beautiful pictorial celebration of life, health, and vitality. It's full of science, and it's beautiful for the coffee table. It's really going to inspire you to make better living choices. No catch? Well, a little catch. You need to call us live right now, and we'll mail the first 5 callers a free copy of this beautiful book. So go ahead, call us, and we're going to take a short break right now. Go Healthy for Good. We'll be right back.
As I was reading through The Great Hope, this phrase caught my attention. In the truths of His Word, God has given to men a revelation of Himself. And to all who accept them, they are a shield against the deceptions of Satan. Here's why this phrase brings me hope. I'm a firm believer that we are living in the end times, and to know that Satan is out there working harder than ever to deceive mankind, I'm kind of scared. But I can hold on to the truths of God as revealed to us in His Word. And this brings me hope because His Word reveals His character, and His character is my shield that I can use against the deceptions of Satan.
Welcome Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. We're taking more of your health questions, especially ones related to bullying. You can call us right now, 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. And just before the break, I shared with you that I have this wonderful gift, this beautiful book called Celebrations. If you call us right now with a question, then you get a copy of our Celebrations book, no strings attached. Just call us and you get it for free. First five callers with questions related to bullying are going to get a free copy of the book. Another wonderful announcement I made before the break is that our webpage is up. That's hopetv.org/gohealthy, and you'll find all the previous episodes of the show and the recipes, and you can watch the live broadcast in high definition. And for the cooks out there, remember the recipes are posted for your convenience. Just take a look. I now have some questions from you for Brian Kittleson. Brian, how can kids witnessing bullying intervene without becoming targets?
That is a tough one. Kids witnessing bullying are fearful of being labeled as snitches. And that is the last thing that a kid wants to be labeled. And yet they're seeing this and they don't agree with it. And just by the fact that they haven't told anyone, they're really perpetuating the bullying. And so I think that we have to, as teachers and parents, administrators, when these kids come to us to tell us something, we have to do everything in our power to keep it anonymous, to give them that protection, to find a way to deal with the problem without saying that we heard about it from Joey. And I think as kids learn that they've been protected through these experiences, then they're going to be more willing to share.
So do it anonymously. Don't let anyone see that you're going to let somebody know.
Absolutely.
But do it.
Yes.
Please do it. Next text message. Thank you. When should kids be encouraged to handle situations themselves, and when should they go to the teacher?
Ooh, these are fantastic questions. When to go, when to not. You know, repetition is a key component here. Repetition and level of seriousness. These are hard concepts for kids. But, you know, when they see something happening, and they've seen it happen more than once, they can see that this is becoming a habit, I think that is just so important for them to just break that cycle of dysfunction and let someone know.
Right.
And I think we have to be there for them, as
yes,
parents.
Absolutely.
And teachers.
Now, we have a caller on the line, yeah. Deborah from Tennessee. Deborah, welcome to Go Healthy for Good. What's your question for us tonight? Deborah, are you there? Okay, here's another text message. Sorry, Deborah, we seem to have lost you. I believe my child has a bullying personality. How can I help them so they won't hurt others?
You know, that is fantastic. I wish more parents, you know, took that approach, noticing that my child has a strong personality, is pretty domineering in the home, maybe picks on their siblings, and you see these attributes. I think it is very important to talk very seriously to your child about the potential that they have within themselves to become bullies, and to just be real with them and to talk to them about how much pain that they can cause by their actions, even by just their words, so that they can really wrestle with that. And when they see themselves kind of beginning to do these activities, those words that we've given them as parents and as teachers are going to come back and hopefully, you know, change their behavior.
So it's just reflecting back to them what they're actually doing.
Oh, absolutely.
Hmm.
Absolutely.
Now, here is a text message from Carmen in Maryland. What should a parent do if they suspect their child is bullied and reports it to school authorities that the school does not show appropriate concern? This is an issue that unfortunately may result in children taking matters into their own hands with disastrous consequences.
Wow. Fantastic question. I think that a parent is going to need to be relentless in that situation. When a school, I call it stiff arms, discounts what you're saying, I think that you cannot allow yourself to be pushed away. You should be serious enough to withdraw your student from that school if there is no response. Of course, there's always the mechanisms of going above the school, above the principal, to the school board, etc. If that's necessary, do it.
Thank you. We have another caller on the line, Angela from Rhode Island. Angela, what's your question for us tonight?
Hi, good night, everybody. My question is, I have a daughter who is 12 years old. She's in middle school, and she was recently the victim of bullying. And because of it, you know, it affected her self-esteem. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to know, as a parent, what can I do to boost her self-esteem in a positive way?
Great question, Angela.
Thank you, Angela. And that is one of the number one factors. That's how kids are affected, is their self-esteem. And my counsel to you would be to give her those boosting comments and statements that only a parent can give. You know all the special gifts that she has, and you can point those out better than anyone else can. I would say just reinforce all the positive things in her life. And, you know, if there's something she's not doing that she's really good at, get her involved in those activities so that she starts to feel that success. Because, as we know, success builds success, and then the student will start to recover that confidence that they have.
So play to her strengths.
Yes.
And really make her feel good about herself.
Absolutely.
Well, bullying is an age-old problem. The difference now is that we know much more about it, and there are better ways to address it. Parents, teachers, grandparents, and guardians, let's be proactive. And if it's happening, be open with your young people. Encourage healthy dialogue. Watch for those telltale signs that we've discussed tonight, and if you see them, address the issue immediately. Victims, you can use social media to make your voice heard. The very medium that many bullies use is also available to you. Tell the world the truth, and the truth can set you free. Tomorrow we'll be talking about exercise. Don't miss it. It's the secret to longevity. Thank you for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. Together we can make our world a better place.